Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Chantel Houston. I'm the summer intern for NCPA right now, and I have Dr. Kevin Day, one of the pharmacists on staff at NCPA, here with me to talk about the new NCPA Transitions of Care Toolkit. How are you doing today, Mr. Day?
I'm great. How are you, Chantel?
I'm doing fine. So I just have a couple questions regarding the new toolkit, what it has to offer, and how it's going to be a good resource for our members. So can you explain transitions of care and the major problems the healthcare system faces during these transitions?
Yeah, sure. So transitions of care refers to any time a patient moves between different levels of care, whether that's between a hospital and a long-term care facility at home, or a hospital at home. Oftentimes, you know, currently, I guess, for the past couple of years, most of the talk has been about the hospital to home transition, and that's certainly the one I think that patients have the most problem with. They go from being monitored 24/7 and having easy access to nurses, physicians, and everybody else that they could possibly need to take care of themselves, to transitioning back to their home life, which may or may not be a positive health environment. And certainly there's a lot of information that most patients get at discharge, and a lot of times that can be really overwhelming, and ends up that a lot of that education gets lost. So a patient gets home and really doesn't necessarily understand or know exactly what they're supposed to be doing to take care of themselves. So that's where the transitions of care programs come in, whether it's pharmacy-led or hospital-led, or you know, somebody else kind of doing that work. Doesn't necessarily matter on what you're talking about for a transitions of care program, right? It's just anybody who is trying to improve those processes so that the patient has better care at home, with the end goal of reducing readmissions. So right now, about one in every five Medicare patients who are discharged from a hospital are readmitted to the hospital within 30 days. This is a lot of, I mean, it's a ton of patients, right? 20%. And it puts a ton of undue stress on the patients, on their family, and also in the system as a whole. It's estimated to cost Americans' tax dollars $25 billion a year for these, you know, not necessary hospital readmissions. So that's where, you know, we have put the toolkit together for pharmacies to possibly help their local hospitals in transitions of care and help improve the patient care experience and reduce these readmission numbers.
Okay. So you talked about the pharmacist's involvement in transitions of care. So what opportunities actually exist for community pharmacists who are looking into this?
Yeah, sure. So I think that pharmacists can have a huge impact, you know, on this patient care initiative, because most of the readmissions, or at least many of them, are related to medication problems. So if we're going to sit and call ourselves the medication experts, it's really time to act that out, right? And not necessarily just let it happen in words, but really show it in deeds. So if it's medication-related problems that are causing readmissions, then I think the pharmacists and the medication experts should be the ones that are being involved and pulled into the team to help the patients understand those and relieve those problems. And again, if we can reduce the medication errors and the medication-related problems that are causing readmissions, I think we can reduce, you know, the overall healthcare burden. So community pharmacists in particular are even better positioned than maybe other pharmacists on the team, because they see the patient in the outpatient setting, right, and in the community, close to their home. They might already have a home delivery service. They might have a program that pharmacists already spend time in the patient's home, and are really able to delve to those next level issues, right? It's one thing to sit in the hospital at bedside and educate a patient on taking medications as directed and not using old medications and things like that. It's another for the patient to get to the community pharmacy after discharge, find out about what the copays are for the medications, and say, I don't think I can afford that right now. I'll just take what I have at home, and just fall back into old habits really quickly. Or even it's something of, you know, patients that we know who, you know, don't like to afford copays, or physically can't afford the copays, and they try to stretch out medications for longer than they should be, and maybe take one every other day and things like that. Those issues are really, really hard to catch anywhere except for where a patient's really comfortable, either in their home or possibly in your community pharmacy. So I think that long-term, you know, kind of continuum of care that the community pharmacies already are on with their patients really makes them valuable allies in the transitions of care program.
So it seems like there's a lot of opportunity in community pharmacy for transitions of care. What would be the main components of a community pharmacy-led program like this?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. To me, there's a couple of kind of main pillars of a transitions of care program. And again, whether it's pharmacy-led or not, doesn't really change, but with the idea of hitting the issue that many of these readmissions are medication related. So let's solve that issue first. So the different ways that this happens, the first big challenge can be access to the medications themselves, right? If a patient's been in a hospital for, 3 days or a week or possibly 2 weeks or longer, and they finally are getting the discharge day, I've been in those situations. I've watched family members go through those situations. I'm sure many of you guys have too who are listening and understand what I'm talking about. A physician tells you at 4 o'clock the day before, hey, we're going to send you home tomorrow. And man, they go to sleep ready to go. They wake up like a child on Christmas morning and just ready to get out of the hospital. And they're excited. They're pumped up. A lot of times before the nurses make it in for morning rounds, the patient's dressed. They got the gown put away and think they're about to wheel out the door, at 9 a.m. Unfortunately, it often doesn't happen, right? The patients don't actually leave until, maybe late in the afternoon. And by then, they're fed up with the whole process and many times they're just so anxious to get home. A lot of times they'll have family or maybe pets or just the comforts of home, right? That's the only goal is to get to the house. So they do that, and again, oftentimes this happens late on Friday afternoon. So the easy scenario is that the patient gets home late Friday night. There's family there, they go to bed, they wake up on Saturday. Think maybe about the fact that they're supposed to be taking different medications, but they don't have access to them. They didn't get them at the hospital. They don't have them with them. And if their local pharmacy maybe has really short hours on Saturday or is closed on Saturday or Sunday, or maybe it's a patient that doesn't drive and they don't have a ride to the pharmacy on Saturday, whatever that might be, all of a sudden it gets 4 or 5 days later before the patient actually picks up the medications that they were supposed to have at discharge. So that's one way that I think community pharmacies can alleviate that, is if they know a patient's going to be discharged and they know what medications they're going to be on, which would involve some collaboration with the hospital, they can solve that access issue by getting the patient those medications either right at discharge, immediately before, or very shortly after, to be sure that the patients are taking what the physicians and the medical team have aligned for them and put together as their best package. Another key kind of pillar to the transitions of care program is the education aspect, right? I mentioned before of those crazy discharge days. There's a line of people that are coming into the patient's room to educate them on everything from a new diet and exercise and physical therapy to the new medications that they have, and maybe there's 8 new doctors that they need to see in the next coming weeks. There can just be a complete overload of information. And again, those patients are just so focused on going home that a lot of times it's really easy for them to just nod along and not actually absorb any of that information. So that's something that a pharmacist, and hopefully it's a pharmacist that is stressworthy and maybe somebody that the patient already has a good relationship with, can follow up a couple of days after the discharge and be involved as a continuing aspect of that education and revisit the medication specifically. Again, let's play the role of the medication expert and what the new medications are, why they're important, how they need to be taking them, and really hit on those adherence pillars. And the third thing is the access to follow-up care. It's at discharge, as I've mentioned now a whole bunch of times, is the patients get all this information, and the whole goal is that the discharge instructions and the discharge information is going to get them to their follow-up care appointments, whether it's with their primary care physician or specialists, possibly new specialists that they've never seen before, and in many cases a combination of those, right, different healthcare partners. And this follow-up care is something, again, that often can fall off, right? Patients who don't have access to insurance or for whatever reason don't prioritize getting to their primary care doctor and really getting that follow-up care that's incredibly important for their long-term health. So that's a place, again, where a pharmacist as an accessible provider and a really trusted provider can really help impact on the education of how important these follow-up appointments are, can double-check and know one way or another if a patient even has made the appointments with the follow-up docs, and if they have, can be an extra reminder source of, hey, you told me that you had that appointment coming up on Thursday, I just want to remind you that you're going to go to that and make sure there's no conflicts or anything like that. And if there is, of not letting that appointment fall off. And certainly things come up that the initially scheduled appointment may or may not work out, but what happens way too often is a patient will cancel an initially scheduled follow-up appointment and never make a new one. And they'll end up back in the hospital long before they ever went to their PCP to talk about what went on at the hospital interchange. And the last thing, too, is to make that follow-up care as worthwhile as possible is for the pharmacist to play a really key role on the healthcare team and communicate with those PCPs. Right? If a patient gets discharged and the pharmacy's involved in the process, and maybe they observe a problem that the patient's having with one of the new medications, if the PCP has access to the discharge record, they might think that, you know, the medication list that they have there is perfectly accurate. If the pharmacy, you know, maybe through discussion with the patient, knows that there's something that's happening differently and they fail to communicate to that physician, it makes that follow-up care appointment, you know, less fruitful than it can be. So that's the last aspect, I think, is having the pharmacy really part of that team and interacting with the primary care physician as well, of getting the information about what's really going on in the patient's care.
Okay. So focusing on the toolkit now, we know that NTPA has a new transitions of care toolkit. Why was this kit developed, and who exactly was it developed for?
Yeah, sure. So the toolkit was designed for pharmacy owners, for community pharmacy NCPA members and similar, you know, types to them. So independent community pharmacist is the key role. And it was developed essentially just as a way for us to show our focus as well, along with the rest of healthcare, on this really important issue. And myself personally, I watched my grandpa go through some big problems with transitions of care programs. And, you know, even when I was a pharmacy student, my grandma got discharged from a hospital, and I spent 2.5 hours trying to get her medications figured out and aligned for her. Again, as a pharmacy student, working with my dad, who's a pharmacist, and my mom, who's a nurse, and it still took us half of an evening just to get that stuff in order. And that was kind of the first instinct that for me, of this is such a big issue, and there's so many patients that won't have access to a resource like me to be able to figure that out. And the most likely outcome for them is to end up readmitted because of some medication-related issue. So it was really, you know, kind of a combination of these factors that said, this is something that can be very valuable for the pharmacist. There's a business model behind it, at least potentially, but it's really, really good for patient care. It's a great way for pharmacists to kind of plug themselves into the healthcare team and become an invaluable member of their healthcare community.
So what sort of things can members expect to find in the toolkit?
Sure. So the toolkit's got a wide variety of resources. Some, you know, including this podcast, it actually becomes one of them, I think. It's just an overview of what we're talking about with transitions of care and you know, kind of what pillars of programs might be. So there's more detail on those kinds of issues. One of the big things that's part of the toolkit is how you would approach a hospital that you might want to consider partnering with. What kind of information is really important for a pharmacy to know before they're going to walk into a hospital. Who in the hospital they should be trying to target, and what sort of pitch you might give to a local hospital if you want to get a community pharmacy transitions of care program off the ground. Some other things that are involved are information about a CMS program that's kind of why the reason, part of the reason why hospitals and so many healthcare are talking about this issue is that CMS is penalizing hospitals based on their readmission rates. So there are some hospitals across the country that are losing as much as 3% of their total Medicare reimbursement, which for a big hospital can be a very, very large number. On average, it's about $200,000 per hospital that's being penalized per year, which is still, it's plenty enough for a hospital to know that number and be trying to figure out ways that they can improve that. So I have resources, you know, there's resources in the toolkit for how you can find out how that penalty is calculated, you know, what it kind of looks like across the country, and find out specifically what the local hospitals are in your area, what their penalty rate is. Again, it's really important information to kind of arm yourself with before you walk in the door. In that line, too, the penalty is based off of 6 disease states. So we had articles written on those 6 specific disease states that the penalty focuses on, and kind of give some key tips and pearls about ways that pharmacies and others in the team can help prevent readmissions associated with those disease states. And some of them are things that aren't necessarily medication-related. Right, so heart failure is the leading cause of readmissions across the country and the number one focus of this program. And certainly there are all kinds of medications. A patient is a newly diagnosed heart failure patient is going to come out with probably a minimum of 4 or 5 new prescription medications. Somebody who's been on heart failure and has an exacerbation is almost guaranteed to come out with changes to their medications, increase or decrease in doses across the board. So there are medication-related things. But also one of the simplest things that we can do to help avoid a heart failure readmission is to have the patient monitor their weight, right? This is something we know. It's something that all healthcare providers are probably telling the patients, but it's one of those things for sure that on the last day of that admission, when they're about to go home, and somebody, whether it's a nutritionist or the physician or a nurse, is saying, "Oh, check your weight every day and call us if it's out of, you know, if it's different," that is almost for sure a piece of material that's just going in one ear and right out the other. But that's something that absolutely can prevent a readmission. If we see, you know, from a Tuesday to a Wednesday that a patient's gained a pound and a half and can adjust their Lasix dose in that moment, or have a physician adjust their Lasix dose, you know, right away, that can absolutely prevent a readmission the next day or the following day. So those are the kind of tips and pearls of different, necessarily non-medication related things that community pharmacies can help their patients watch out for to prevent those readmissions.
Okay. So what, in addition to all the other things that the toolkit includes, what can it actually do to help pharmacists get their programs off the ground and running?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the key thing is to get the pharmacists, you know, the key goal for the toolkit is to get the pharmacists thinking about ways that they could be part of a transitions of care program, whether it's something that they're leading or just helping a hospital with, and the right answers to questions that they need to be considering from the get-go. You know, at some point, every transitions of care program is going to look remarkably different because hospitals are involved in this in different levels. You know, if you are possibly considering a hospital that has a huge cardiology, you know, sector, your program might focus almost exclusively or possibly completely exclusively on heart failure and, you know, acute myocardial infarction as two of the disease states. Another community pharmacist might run a successful program that focuses, you know, doesn't even touch cardiology and focuses only on infectious disease with pneumonia and maybe pulmonary with COPD. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, I can't walk you through an entire program because the programs are going to look different. But I do think we do a good job in the toolkit of providing those basic level questions that everyone's going to be asking that can be the groundwork of how to get a program started.
Awesome. So what successes have you actually witnessed with community pharmacists actually involved in these types of programs?
Yeah, so again, because it's such a hot topic and has been for a handful of years, there's a lot of programs that are already up and running. Many of them are still in early-ish stages, you know, maybe the first 18 months or so, and are led by residents. A lot of them have grant funding involved and different things like that. But at the APHA meeting, you know, just a handful of months ago, the community pharmacy residents all have their posters there for their research. And I think it was probably almost half of the community pharmacy residents across the country did something related to a transitions of care program. So it's certainly growing. I mean, I have a list of a couple dozen community pharmacies that have programs off the ground. But a couple that I'll highlight, you know, just because I can here, is one in Seattle, Washington, is through a pharmacy called Kelly Ross Pharmacy Group. And Josh Akers from Kelly Ross actually did a continuing education webinar for us this month as well. So that's available on the toolkit, too, is kind of detailing out what they've done in their program. And they're working with a group called Virginia Mason, who's a leading edge, you know, kind of top-line healthcare provider and healthcare integrated health network. But they still were able to benefit greatly from a pharmacist-led program. Another one, too, that I'll call out to is Jennifer Shannon at Lilly's Pharmacy outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Jennifer opened her store solely with the goal of collaborating with a local hospital and running programs like this. So she's been working with the hospital for about 18 months now and has just been running it just on a referral basis, right? Go in and convince the hospital that your services are worthwhile and have them send the hardest patients and the patients that they are most concerned about having adverse events. And that's, you know, where now is a key part of her business is caring for these patients and helping the hospital care for those patients. So those are just a couple. Again, there are dozens that I know of, and there are more and more, it seems like every day. Just in the last month or so since the toolkit's been live, I've gotten many questions from pharmacists that are looking for some extra information and different things. And it's one of the great things that NCPA provides for their members is access to the staff, right? So happy to be a resource for anybody that has, you know, specific questions or is looking for more information about how they might be ready to get started.
All right, well, I don't have any more questions for you. Thank you again, Kevin. And if you're interested in learning more about the Transitions of Care Toolkit, you can visit ntpanet.org/TOC.